Well, welcome back after that short break, which is always good to be able to stretch and rediscover that you've got ears. Our third presentation comes from Ioan Dunescu from Romania. Ioan is a professor at the University of Bucharest and is a leading professor in the field of social work and specializes in probation. I'm going to hand the floor straight over to him and ask him to do his presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, John. I'm always overflattered by your introductions. I don't know how to react to that. I will just go straight to the point, to the presentation, without making any comments. I prepared a very brief presentation for two reasons. One reason is that, as a professor, I cannot even walk in the park without a PowerPoint presentation. And the second reason is that I hope that this will structure my presentation a little bit better, so you can see what are the main points that I wanted to make in my paper. I don't know if you can see this presentation properly. Can you see it? Yeah, everything is okay?
Yep.
Very good. The presentation is made from looking at the community sanctions and measures in particular, or I would like to say from the probation perspective. And obviously it's based on my personal experience in this field and also on some literature on penal policy transfer, where Rob Kenton was very active. Okay, some preliminary observations about the international development from my perspective. I would like to start by saying that the development of community sanctions and measures or development of probation in Central and Eastern Europe, I think in the last 20 to 30 years, is the most significant novelty in the criminal justice system, as far as I see. In the Western Europe, a lot of deep organizational transformations took place in the last 20 to 30 years ago. We have transforming rehabilitation in England and Wales. We have the amalgamation in different countries like in France, Croatia, and so on, between prison and probation. And we also have joining probation with the services for juveniles in Italy. So a lot of transformations also in the probation services in western part of Europe. Again, many transformations took place also in the competencies of probation services and also in ideology. You see more and more work with violent extremists in some countries, like in Belgium, for instance, or in France. You see more interest in mental health in countries like the Netherlands. And so on. But besides this huge diversity, we can also see some kind of commonplace, like, for instance, an interest in the risk needs responsibility model. I think everybody speaks in Europe now about risk assessment, about criminogenic needs, about responsivity. I'm not sure to what extent these principles are really implemented into practice with accuracy, but nevertheless, they become part of the ideology, a new ideology, a new narrative of the probation service in Europe. Apart from that, we have more and more ticking box boxing culture. We have more and more forms that probation officers need to fill out. We have a lot of managerialism. We have a lot of electronic monitoring. Actually, especially in the new countries, electronic monitoring took over the probation. The activity became the core activity of the probation service in many countries. Turkey, for instance, you have hundreds of thousands of cases of on electronic monitoring without any other intervention. But we can also see more and more interest in human rights standards and in different aspects that belong to this human rights agenda. Champions for this change process, in my view, are the Council of Europe and the European Commission. The first one were the drivers from the political and technical perspectives. The Council of Europe, for instance, adopted several recommendations, and of course, the European probation rules are the most important ones. They also provided technical assistance, a lot of conferences, expert meetings, platform meetings, and so on. So they provided a lot of information about, you know, how probation should be developed and how the probation practice should be run. European Commission played a more pragmatic and financial role, especially in the Central and Eastern European countries. In the pre-accession and the transition period, we all remember the FAR projects and other projects like that that were financed by the European Commission to discourage or to decrease the number of prisoners and develop probation services in this part of part of Europe. As somebody said, these two organizations, Council of Europe and the European Commission, together played a huge role in the penal policy transfer. But in the last, let's say, 10 years, we see more and more organizations or countries interested in disseminating knowledge and expertise in this field. We see Norway and Sweden. Norway has this mechanism, Norlau, and Sweden, they use SIDA quite a lot in promoting these ideas, especially at the periphery of the European Union, geographically speaking. For instance, Norway was very active in Moldova, in the Ukraine, and Sweden is more and more active in even in countries like in Africa. Strengths and weaknesses, in my opinion, for this kind of dynamic, were the strengths to start with were that the development of probation in Europe, especially in Central and Eastern Europe, was incredibly dynamic due to this kind of exchange. In some countries, probation service took like 100 years to develop as it is now. But there are countries like in Croatia where within 5 years they already reach a point where they have already a mature probation service. Slovenia is another example like that. So they avoided to waste a lot of time and resources. They avoided to make the same mistakes as other countries in the past. So they have fully fledged probation services within a few years. So this is a major strength, I think. When it comes to weaknesses, I think, unfortunately, a lot of penal policy transfers took place based on this coping strategy, where different mechanisms, tools, programs, or even institutions were copied from one place and transplanted to another without proper adaptation or without any cultural sensitivity or whatever, or, you know, things like that. And I just gave a few examples. For instance, risk assessment tools. You can see the same risk assessment tool in Bulgaria, like in, I don't know, in England. You can also see probation order in Bulgaria, although Bulgaria belongs to the civil law tradition, where they use quite a lot suspended sentences rather than probation order. So there are some not very good examples of how the penal policy can really work. Another weakness, I think, is the fact that most of these projects were time limited. And sometimes once the projects ended, the idea died. And I have a few examples in mind, like COSA, the Circle for Accountability, developed in United States, but then in other countries, including Netherlands and England. Some Central and Eastern European countries tried COSA based on projects. But once the projects ended, COSA disappeared from this part of the world. The same goes with other examples, like another good example, I think, is the use of different management models, excellence model in management. Again, it was introduced in some probation services, but disappeared after a few years after the projects ended. So this is another weakness, I think. The sustainability was not always a very good dimension of this project. Conclusions, I think we are living increasingly in a complex and multipolarized world, including in Europe. I think we have a lot of voices in Europe when it comes to expertise and power. We have many, many jurisdictions that are now involved in this kind of technical exchange, knowledge exchange at the European Union level. As I mentioned already, Norway, Sweden, but also Netherlands more and more are involved in this kind of assistance, technical assistance projects. I think in the future, Council of Europe and the European Commission will continue to play a significant role in harmonization. And I gave a few examples in my paper on how the existing framework decisions or the green papers on different issues contribute to a greater harmonization in the penal field, even if the legal framework is not very clear in this respect. Countries are still holding their sovereignty over this kind of field, but nevertheless, there are developments in the direction of harmonization for obvious reasons, for cooperation, for security, safety, and so on. I think we can... We can see more and more innovation in Europe in this respect. I think we see more and more technology used, not only in supervision but also in training. For instance, I learned about a very interesting innovation in Netherlands, where the training can take place using different games and exercises that are actually can be made remotely without the trainer being in the room. I'm not yet convinced by this kind of approach, but nevertheless, this kind of development is out there and probably will be continue in the future. One of the questions that attracted my attention from the script that you sent us, John, was how England and Wales will participate in this dialogue, especially post Brexit. And in my opinion, I think England and Wales will be able to continue to play an important role in Europe in terms of the development of probation, especially if it will continue to invest in innovation. And in this respect, I think universities are really, really core resources. Universities in England and Wales have very good, strong traditions and a lot of potential to innovate in this field, to produce evidence on what works or the systems or other dimensions that are really useful for the probation development in Europe. But of course, I think funding is also important, and the former DFID or the existing Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I think they also can play an important role in supporting this innovation to travel to Europe. Again, I think England and Wales can continue the membership in the international organization or regional organizations like CEP. And this can be a good platform where ideas can be debated, and obviously we hope that England and Wales will continue to play an important role in the knowledge production and dissemination. Thank you very much. I hope I was within time.
Well, not quite, but thank you very much, Johan. It was good to have your contribution. Sally from New York. One of the things I'd like to do is perhaps broadened the discussion. We've had European organizations mentioned, and I wondered from a United Nations perspective, do you see the UN having an important role to play, particularly post-COVID, in driving justice reform?
John, thank you for asking. I'm probably not entitled to speak on behalf of UN, so it's my personal opinion, of course. So as I see right now, as I'm still new in UN, but as I see right now that the role of UN in this particular initiatives and developments will be developed and strengthened. As you know, that UN started a huge reform, and it seems like it started like 2 years earlier than all these COVID situations started. And it seems like it started, you know, in right moment, and it is still developing the reform, and the approaches are really changing. So I think that the role will be really, you know, growing in terms of criminal justice reforms and taking in mind there are so many changes happened within last half of the year, including some dramatical change in approaches countries are using in terms of how they deal with prison population, what happened with probation services during the lockdown restrictions, and how generally the priorities of the countries has changed in terms of, you know, being more interested in public health and restructuring of national budgets and change of developing budgets as well, because this was like huge, you know, budget support and financial support for many countries in the developing world. So I think that what we can expect is a huge change overall within the criminal justice system and within the main actors who are currently available on the scene. And I fully agree with all predictions which we have heard today. I really believe that we even probably right now, it's very difficult to understand what happens within the next half of the year or within the next 2 years, taking in mind how rapidly this is developing, the all coronavirus, COVID-19, and the reaction of different member states. So we still are in the process of, I think, in the process of understanding and scoping and mapping how huge this pandemic influenced not only the public health system, but also the criminal justice and overall governmental structure. I believe that even the police, you know, crisis, which we have discussed during the first part of the today workshop, even this happened on the background of everything what happened with COVID-19 in the United States. I imagine that similar, you know, circumstances may happen in many countries. And we can see from different countries where police reform was discussed, we can see almost everywhere that the public opinion was like worsened, was changed so rapidly and so unexpectedly. If you remember the period when we worked for EU project, EU and Bill was leading on this work with police. If you remember, it was a case then the famous sportsman from Kazakhstan was killed on the street. And this case has started dramatic movement around the society, and there were lots of, you know, similar events which is happening right now in the US. And what is interesting that this this change in public perception of police is happening very rapidly. Mm. And regardless how strong is the government or how open is the government for discussion. So we can, I think we should expect the similar situations in many countries which are currently having real troubles with public health situation, because all these layers, they come together. Mm. And what we see right now in the US may be repeated in many countries. And
I think the connectivity of the agendas is a very powerful point, but also the speed of which one agenda affects the another is well made. Would anybody else like to pick up the reform agenda that Yuan was talking about? Thank you, Nick.
Yeah, can I guess it's a question more than a comment to Yuan about the Council of Europe and the European Commission and their utility in terms of supporting change and reform, and whether you have sort of good examples of where they have proved an ally, and indeed others maybe where they've been less useful. You know, I have a number of reasons for asking, but I think I get the sense that they are an underused resource or an underused route by which to either help change take place or indeed ensure that it stays changed, if you see what I mean.
Yuan, do you want to pick that up?
Yeah, of course. Well, I have a lot of good examples of how Council of Europe and European Commission influence changed in Central and Eastern Europe, in countries at least. I have to say that at least the European Commission was really instrumental in developing probation service in many countries in this part of Europe, including Romania. And also Council of Europe is continuously playing a very important role in promoting high standards of practice and human rights and expertise and so on. So I think there are many, many good examples of this kind. But to some extent, I think going back to the communication strategy that we mentioned earlier, I think we are not always very good in showing these examples, showing these good practices. We don't know how to explain to people what these institutions did or are doing even now. So I think we need to work on that, how to make these examples known better. I think that's something that we can work more on. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to pick that up? Anna, thank you, Anna.
Yes, thank you. I want to mention something regarding communication, language, and also because Yuan's presentation makes me think about it. Thank you very much, Yuan. As you can imagine, I found your presentation super interesting and also very familiar at the same time. You did very well. You explained. Actually, I have to say that you had a very good communication strategy, presenting very good what is the Council of Europe, the European Commission. So you did it very well. Thank you. I would like to say that it's very interesting to be involved in international exchanges, and that now more and more countries want to be involved in these exchanges. I also highlighted that in my article and also in my presentation, but there is something that I did not mention, and I think that you already mentioned, but it's important that I highlight it again. From my perspective as a woman from Barcelona working in an international organization, I have to say that the language issue is a difficulty, a really huge difficulty. And this brings me to the question that was raised at the very beginning of this meeting and related also to the communication strategy. In countries where less English is spoken or where there is a difficulty in communicating in English, although their intervention programs, activities, projects are excellent, and those activities could be a very good examples to be shared, they will be always be more reluctant to participate. And this causes exclusion. And this does not promote ownership, access, participation, and so on. Of course, from the organization where I work, we always try to involve all the different countries' perspective, but this is especially difficult when you work with an international environment, when sometimes it requires from you a very well use of English. And of course, it requires also a bit of patience from the English speakers' side to understand your own language spoken from very different accents and So this is a bit what I wanted to share with you.
Okay. We're slightly constrained for time. So could anybody indicate who would like to come in next, please? Any more contributions on the Yuan presentation? Because, Yuan wants to come back. You are going to have a final word, I promise you. So let's pass to Yuan to have his wrap up. And then we're going to pass over to Rob Canton. So Yuan, over to you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking the other day, and I'm very happy to see Saula here with us. And I think it's also linked to the presentation that I made today. I think we focus too much inwards. We focus a lot on what's going on in Europe, as if Europe is the only place where we can develop things. Yeah. I think we need to start learning more from other places and looking outwards, like, you know, looking to what's going on in Japan or what's going on in Malaysia and in different parts of Australia. I heard a lot about very interesting examples of good practices and good mechanisms of reintegration in the community. Even in Middle East, some practices are really fascinating. Of course, they might or might not be relevant or useful everywhere, but they can be adapted. They can be. We can learn from all these examples and. And it's a little bit frustrating for me that for prisons, we have prison brief, where you can see everything what is going on around the world in terms of, you know, prisoners, structure, dynamics, and so on. But when it comes to community sanctions and measures, we have only space too in Europe, but we don't have data about what's going on elsewhere. And I think here is where United Nations can really do something to help us build up this kind of international dialogue in order for us to have a broader picture of what's going on in the world. A sort of prison brief, but for probation, could be a good example to start with. I know that United Nations is now thinking about reforming or updating the Tokyo rules. This could be a good opportunity for us to learn first what is going on, how are these community sanctions and measures developed around the world first, and then to change the rules. But this is just a suggestion.
Well, it's a powerful suggestion and one that's going to shape up. We've come to the end of our three presentations, so thank you very much for listening. If you want to find us, we're on criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on INTCJ Network. And thanks for being there, everybody. Our plan is to ask you to put some reactions and feedback in writing, but Rob is also going to take us through some discussion points. So over to you, Rob.
Thank you very much, John. I'm going to be very disciplined because time's against us, and I'm just going to take 2 minutes to comment on some of the principal themes that we've been discussing this afternoon. One is, I think, the importance of institutionalizing change. Jan spoke about it at the end about little sustainability, and Nick raised it in the first place. How do you embed things so they don't backslide? Nick spoke about the importance of an evidence base, but what if the evidence doesn't even exist? And in some countries, equality data, for example, is not even collected. And this, I think, can lead to Jan's point about how there is inappropriate copying, because what we know is inappropriately or insufficiently contextualized. We spoke about the importance of legitimacy, the limitations of imposing reform from above. You need to embed it and have it owned by a workforce. We spoke about legitimacy and how a code of ethics might be able to contribute to ethical practice. Nikki raised a number of invaluable points. One we didn't have time to develop was the theme of corruption, which she encountered in Africa. And perhaps one could generalize from that to talk about those vested interests that oppose an ethical dissemination of practice in the way we're describing. Nikki also said, in fact, perhaps I can say that Rob Watson has elegantly summarized something that Nikki said that's really important here on Twitter. The loudness of our voice does not reflect our needs to be cared for and treated with respect in the criminal justice system. Nikki Woods makes the distinction that gender-based issues are an endemic issue in criminal justice. Terribly well put, and thank you for that, Rob, and thank you for the thought in the first place, Nikki. The importance of communication and the recognition that not everyone is similarly placed to act either as a speaker or as a listener, and that these things are gendered, and that, as Anna pointed out, the absence of role models for women in communication means that there is a risk of persisting the way in which women are so commonly overlooked in agendas for change. For me, those were some of the most important points to come out of the seminar, and I wanted to say them before they get lost. But I particularly wanted to share with you finally some points of evaluation. John will be sending out a questionnaire, as he said, but I would like to put this up on the shared screen, if I may. And that is this. Is that now working? Can you see this? This is a rather tried and maybe a little bit weary way of summarizing some of the things, strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats. These are some I listed for myself, and that can be made available if you like. There isn't really time for us to talk through these or to add to them in the way that I'd hoped. But I think I'd like to say that for me, both these seminars have been really enjoyable, and that's a good start, because if people don't enjoy themselves, they will not return. I think we've touched on some of the limitations so far. There are some terribly important topics that we haven't really been able to do justice to. And as was said at the very end, there's a risk of it being too Eurocentric. We need to look at other parts of the world as well. And Saleh's participation here will greatly enrich that network. We've got a lot of capacity, a lot of talent, a lot of connections. And if we can begin to secure projects and succeed, we maybe have the opportunity here to flourish. But I think we shouldn't overlook some of the threats that we have here. Do people want another network? There are networks that exist already. Where does ours fit in relation to those? How easy will it be able to gain funding? And notwithstanding Jan's optimism that Brexit may not disadvantage England and Wales' contribution, there's still some concern about that, particularly with regard to some of the doors that will be closed after Brexit because of funding. That's just something to share with you all. And maybe if you have time to complete the questionnaire and send it back to John, then that could be a framework. If you could add to that, if there are any conspicuous omissions, things that you would like to add to that, though I don't think that's something that we can do for now. So at that point, I will stop sharing. We have a minute to go. John, it's back to you. I think it's your privilege to say the very final word.
Okay. We don't know where this network's going to take us. What we do know is that we had an image in our minds rolling up a snowball and then letting it go down the mountain to see what ideas it would gather. Thank you very, very much for joining with us. With social media, we believe that by putting quality material out online, both in written word, the spoken and visual presentations, we can do some important things. we're going to wave goodbye to Nick, but shortly we'll be waving goodbye to everybody else. Because one of the things I think is important is that we don't steal time. So on behalf of the four of us who are the planning group, so that's Rob, Dave, Rob Canton, that was the first one, Rob was Rob Watson from Rob Canton, Dave and myself. Thank you very much for putting the intellectual energy into this, but also giving us the support by showing up. We really are grateful. We will be reviewing this over the next few weeks, and our strong hope is that you've laid some foundations here that you and your colleagues will be able to build on. And we want to have a criminal justice network which is not inward looking, but is outward looking, and other people will be keen to join and do new things with. Our sign-off line is that ideas and people are the things that will change the systems. And we hope that this is a way of bringing ideas and people together. So, as I see now 11 cheerful faces, can I say thank you very much indeed? And we shall sign off with a thank you. Thank you. And thank you.